The church's music from the 20th century. The 17th century. The 11th century. The 8th century. The 4th century. The best of the church's music from the past 2,000 years. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
What we have in the Donald Trump phenomenon, as well as in the Hillary Clinton phenomenon, is an embrace of the very kind of moral and cultural decadence that conservatives have been saying for a long time is the problem.
People are busy, 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 but they've still got time to sit down and rewatch 666 episodes of Game of Thrones.
So we are very much an end times people, an apocalyptic people, and I think the more that we recover that, the more we'll be prepared to, with integrity, face the darkness of the present age and not lose our minds.
Confessional Lutheran Deadheads, Love, Issues, etc.
Look, if it weren't so disturbing, it would be entertaining. It would make a great reality television program. The presidential campaigns so far on both sides, you just can't make this kind of stuff up. Truth is truly stranger than fiction. And if I would have told you a year ago that this is where we'd be right now, with Donald Trump, the presumptive nominee for the Republican Party, Hillary Clinton occupying that place in the Democratic Party, but still being significantly challenged and beat on a regular basis by a near octogenarian socialist, you would say, no, that's not likely. But here we are. It's reality. It's not reality TV. Well, I guess it is reality TV, because TV drives an awful lot of what's going on. We're going to be getting an update on the November elections. Mark and Molly Hemingway of the Weekly Standard of the Federalist are going to join us a little bit later. Terry Mattingly of GetReligion.org will be our guest. We'll talk about a New York Times column titled "What Makes Texas Texas" that left out something that makes Texas Texas that is very significant. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in live on this Thursday afternoon, May the 11th. We're going to be talking about the November elections, getting our weekly update with Mark and Molly Hemingway. Mark Hemingway is senior writer for the Weekly Standard. Mark, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thanks for having me.
And Molly Hemingway, senior editor for The Federalist. Molly, welcome.
It's great to be here with you.
Molly, what happened last night in the latest round of presidential primaries as we get closer and closer to candidates cinching their nominations?
Yes, well, now we're down to one candidate remaining in the Republican primary, and he did pretty well last night. You would expect, if it's down to one candidate, that he would do really well. But Donald Trump overwhelmingly won West Virginia. There were parts of West Virginia where he got as much as 90% of the vote. He did much less well in Nebraska, where 40% of Republican voters are still voting against him, even though they have no other option in the race left. And for Hillary, who really does have this race all but wrapped up, she had another humiliating defeat in West Virginia, a state that she won 8 years ago overwhelmingly against Barack Obama. But in this case, Bernie Sanders had an outright victory. And not just that, but a bunch of his voters in exit polls said that if it comes down to a Trump versus Hillary Clinton race, Bernie Sanders voters, 40% of them said they would vote for Trump. So you're just continuing to see all sorts of resistance from Americans to voting for either Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump.
What does all of that mean, Mark?
Well, it means that people are still really unhappy with the status quo. You know, you would have looked at this race, particularly on the Democratic side, you know, a year ago and thought that there were all these traditional choices that, you know, voters could go for. I mean, there were all kinds of Republicans that had either run before or that were in the mold of a very traditional Republican nominee, that, and they had several to choose from. And they, voters on the Republican side, chose Donald Trump because they wanted something that is clearly completely different. And in the same way on the Democratic side, you know, Hillary Clinton, you know, she, you know, was considered such a virtual lock. And yeah, she's probably going to win the nominee, become the nominee. But the fact of the matter is, I think something like 20 states have voted against her at this point or something like that. I mean, she's just lost to an unbelievable degree for somebody who has been proclaimed, you know, the inevitable winner for so long.
Well, and not just lost, but she's losing to a Vermont socialist who's like 75 years old. I mean, it's a real sort of humiliating defeat given all that we're told she has going for her.
So let's talk a little bit about that 75-year-old Vermont socialist. Mark, what do you think drives the zeal for Bernie Sanders?
Well, I think it's two things. One is that he's genuine. I mean, he really is kind of a what you see is what you get politician. He's not trying to change the fact that he's, you know, something of a, you know, crazy old codger, you know, from Vermont. I mean, he just comes across as very genuine. And secondarily, he's offering solutions that are radically outside the mainstream. And at this point in time, people are willing to try anything. Now, having said that, I mean, I think if people look closely at Sanders' policies in particular, I mean, they're just incredibly unrealistic policies. I mean, when the New York Times asked the University of Massachusetts economist who put together his healthcare plan, you know, how he came up with the numbers, I think his response in the New York Times was something like, it gets complicated really quickly or something like that. I mean, you know, even Bernie Sanders, his own economist, can't explain how he's going to pay for all these, you know, socialist proposals he's throwing out there. But people don't care. They just want somebody that's going to go in there and take a wrecking ball to Washington, D.C., and that certainly describes Sanders, and that certainly describes Trump in a lot of ways.
Well, it's not just that it's not even really about his solutions, I don't think. It is that he has correctly diagnosed a lot of the problems. His solutions may be awful, and in fact, they are awful, but he has correctly seen that there is so much corruption in the powers of government that they put their hands on the scale to help out people who are close to government officials and that they punish those who aren't. And that is true. So he there is a truth to what he's saying. It's just that his proposals are, you know, completely at odds with the American project.
Okay, Molly, what's driving the zeal for Donald Trump?
I think it's actually very similar. So we haven't really talked as much this campaign season about what's happening in the Democratic Party because of all of the drama and chaos in the Republican Party. But really, when it comes down to it, it's a similar percentage of people in both parties who are supporting the very populist or anti-crony, anti-DC establishment candidate. And, you know, they're either going for Sanders or they're going for Trump. I think there's a reason why you see people saying that if they don't get Trump, they'll go for Sanders, or if they don't get Sanders, they'll go for Trump. Or there's a reason why Trump is, instead of trying to reach out to the conservative base in his party, he's reaching out to Bernie Sanders supporters in Oregon. There was a good story in the Washington Post about that. So I think that people really are just angry. It's not a majority, and we should be always very mindful of that, just because in the case of the Republican Party, that plurality of voters was able to secure a victory does not mean they represent a majority of the people. But it is a sizable percentage of the population, thanks to the help from some Democrats and moderates in the primary process, who are just extremely sick and tired and fed up with not just the way Washington does business, but the way that it's been such a legacy of losing. And I think that they're just almost interested in just the excitement of a Donald Trump candidacy. If you're going to lose anyway, and if you're going to be a loser on the national stage, why not have someone who's kind of fun to watch?
Speaking of reaching out, Mark, what are your expectations for Thursday's planned meeting between Trump and Ryan?
Well, I don't know. I mean, the bottom line is that, as Molly pointed out, you know, the even though Trump's the last guy in the race, there's still a tremendous amount of Republicans that are still aren't voting for him. And when Paul Ryan came out and he, you know, expressed, I think, the feelings of a lot of Republicans that he had some reservations about Donald Trump's candidacy, and he did so by saying, you know, he wanted to support Trump's candidacy, he just needed some sort of reassurance, Trump responded by, you know, sending out surrogates like Sarah Palin and stuff, saying that Paul Ryan's political career was finished, and Sarah Palin promised to campaign against him in his congressional race, and just, you know, the Trump supporters just, you know, went nuclear against Ryan, and I think that that was a big mistake. I mean, Trump, if he's going to win the election at this point in time, he can't just win with, you know, even half or a majority of the Republican Party. I mean, he needs the whole party to line up in a row behind them with all of their resources and all of their support. So I think he's got to go in there and, you know, give Ryan some reassurance. I mean, I think Ryan deserves that, and I think a lot of Republicans feel that, similarly to Ryan in that regard.
Molly, can you explain the criticism that has been leveled against Paul Ryan? And this is some vociferous criticism from people like Pat Buchanan, Sean Hannity, Laura Ingraham.
I don't know if I can explain their thinking because it doesn't entirely make sense to me. But what's interesting is that Paul Ryan is arguing in favor of principle. And a lot of people who support Trump right now are saying you just have to be loyal to the man. It doesn't matter what he says. It doesn't matter how far afield it is from conservative values or Republican principles. You just have to be loyal to that guy. And of all the people in the world that you might have an argument where that worked out in their favor, I don't think Donald Trump is a very good candidate for the argument that you need to be supportive of him as a man. I mean, just in terms of his character and temperament, he's one of the last people you would support as a person. And you really do need some reassurance on the, you know, Paul Ryan's request was so moderate. He just said, I need some reassurance that this Republican standard bearer will uphold the standards of the Republican Party. That is such a modest request that if you can't, you know, throw a bone in the direction of principled Republicans, it's just kind of a joke. Now, I did want to say, you don't actually need the conservative wing of the Republican Party to win, but you would need a lot of support from Hispanics, single women, Black voters, and those are, if you didn't have the support of the conservative wing of the Republican Party, and those voters are even more hostile to Donald Trump than the conservative base of the Republican Party is. So he does have to figure out, he thinks that he can just sort of, Trump thinks he has enough popular appeal that he can make do without reaching out to these various groups. I'm not sure if that's true, but, you know, he's defied expectations previously, so maybe he knows something we don't.
Same question to you, Mark. How do you explain that criticism from those voices?
Well, I mean, look, I mean, the bottom line is they are desperate to win, and they know that they can't win unless the party unites. And there's two ways of going about uniting the party. One is that you could, you know, extend an olive branch because it has been a pretty bruising primary, or, you know, you could try and bully them into supporting you. And obviously, I don't think that the latter path is going to be terribly successful. Having said that, you also need to remember that there's a strong political component to what Paul Ryan is doing here. You know, if you look at the polls right now, maybe it's changing last week. There have been some competitive polls in swing states for Trump that look good for him. But having said that, the vast majority of polls, I think, show Trump losing the election anywhere from, like, you know, 6 to 12 points to Hillary. And that is very, very bad news for the broader Republican Party, which is to say that if Trump loses by 7 or 8 to Hillary Clinton, the possibility the Republicans could lose their historically large House majority are you know, considerable. So what Paul Ryan did to come out and expressing reservations about Trump and the way he ran his candidacy, I don't doubt that it came from a place of principle, but it was also a canny political move in that it gave Republicans who represent more moderate districts across the country some cover not to be pressured into supporting Donald Trump right away, because one of the, you know, major leaders of their party was also saying the same thing. They could point to Paul Ryan and say, well, you know, Paul Ryan, you know, has expressed these same reservations, and that would give them some, you know, breathing room as they, you know, broach the subject of Trump to voters. And that's a good way of giving these candidates some space while they sort out how to run their race as Republicans with Trump at the top of the ticket.
Mark Hemingway is our guest, senior writer for the Weekly Standard, and Molly Hemingway, senior editor for the Federalist. When we come back, we'll talk about another spat between Trump and, in this case, Dr. Russell Moore.
College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois offers ACT, SAT, and PSAT test prep, scholarship application classes, college and career counseling, and more. Hi, this is Lori Konski, president of College Preparation Station. We have helped our students obtain more than $7 million in tuition scholarships in 12 years. Find out more at cpsprep.com. Let us help you create a vision and find your future. The College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois, cpsprep.com.
Throughout the history of the United States, we as a country have enjoyed our catchphrases from "Give me liberty" or "Give me death" to today's classic "It is what it is." TV commercials have added such classics as "Where's the beef?" to "Eat fresh." Here at St. Mark Lutheran Church in Edmond, Oklahoma, we do not resort to catchphrases. Here we are about growing God's family by preaching God's word, by administering the sacraments, and building up God's people. So the next time you find yourself in central Oklahoma on a Sunday morning, come join the friendly folks at St. Mark in Edmond. You'll be glad you did. This is most certainly true.
No ditto heads allowed. You're listening to Issues Etc.
How is confessional Lutheranism similar to and different from American Evangelicalism, Roman Catholicism, and Eastern Orthodoxy? The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for May is titled Being Lutheran. You can browse before you buy at issuesetc.org or call Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040, 800-325-3040. Save $2 by ordering Being Lutheran during the month of May. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month, Being Lutheran.
In my family, education means cultivating wisdom and virtue by teaching what is good, true, and beautiful. Memoria Press makes this type of education possible with their classical Christian curriculum. Characterized by simplicity, quality, and affordability, Memoria Press gives my children a rich classical education. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We'll get an update on the November elections with Mark Hemingway of the Weekly Standard and Molly Hemingway of The Federalist. Before the break, we were talking about some of the spats between Paul Ryan and Donald Trump. Molly, I wanted to ask you about a more recent spat now between Donald Trump and a frequent guest on this program, Dr. Russell Moore. What happened there, and how would you explain it to us?
Yeah, Dr. Russell Moore is the leader of the Southern Baptists public policy arm, the Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission. He's a very prominent advocate for evangelical Christianity in the public square. He's constantly talking to reporters, and he's appearing on TV news and whatnot. And he argues for a very traditional Orthodox Christianity in the face of a hostile media environment. So he's sort of beloved by a lot of evangelicals of different stripes, you know, across the Protestant spectrum, and even among, you know, Catholics and Eastern Orthodox and whatnot as well. So he has been outspoken in his opposition to Donald Trump for ever since Donald Trump really entered the race. He has expressed concern about the types of the ways that Donald Trump talks about Christianity, the ways that he treats people with whom he disagrees, the way that Donald Trump presents Christianity. And so he has been outspoken against that. And this weekend he had an op-ed in the New York Times where he was talking about something kind of unrelated to Trump, but he kind of had a dig at people who are sort of racist supporters of Donald Trump. So Donald Trump takes to Twitter and just went to town on Russell Moore, saying that he was a horrible representative of Christianity and that he was nasty and awful and whatnot. And it was interesting because I actually, you know, I don't condone this, but I think that Donald Trump's insult game is usually really good. He'll say something that's very mean and uncharitable, but it has this element of truth to it that just kind of sticks with you. So he'll say, you know, he refers to Hillary Clinton as being crooked Hillary Clinton. You know, say what you want about Hillary, that sticks. He'll say that, you know, Mitt Romney is a failure. Failure Mitt Romney, this, that, and the other. Well, Mitt Romney did lose a race that he should have won. So it's not nice, it's not fair, but it's, or, you know, but there's some truth to it. In the case of his insult against Russell Moore, it just didn't resonate with anyone. I mean, you might disagree with Russell Moore theologically or politically, and I mean, that's certainly fine, But literally nobody thinks he's nasty. He's like the nicest guy. You know, he routinely interacts with people who disagree with everything he believes, teaches, and confesses, and yet he's still nice to them and generous. So it was just a rare miss for Donald Trump's insult game. It fell flat. And again, because he does need those evangelicals who actually go to church regularly, he needs their support, and this was just a slap in the face for them, and so probably an unwise move on his part.
My sense of that, Molly, was that he didn't really know who Russell Moore was. And so, I mean, here is a guy who actually wrote a book literally called kind of something like Fighting for the Culture War Without Losing the Gospel. This is a guy who, as you say, no one who knows him could possibly see that caricature of him in Donald Trump's tweet. Is it possible that he just didn't know who he was talking about?
I think that is maybe the best explanation I've heard yet for why that failed so much, is that he didn't even know who he was dealing with. Just by way of example, when Russell Moore was asked on TV about Donald Trump's insult against him, which was that he was this awful person who's a bad Christian and not a good representative for evangelicals, Russell Moore agreed with it. He said, "You're right, I am a really bad person who is not a good representative," and then pointed immediately to the gospel of Christ and the salvation that and forgiveness of sins that comes in Christ Jesus. So, I mean, that's the type of guy he is, which was a great way to respond to it, but really pointed to how off the mark Donald Trump's insult was.
But so that point you bring up, did Trump even know who this was, is exactly the kind of thing I think that's giving a lot of Republicans the heebie-jeebies about Donald Trump, because it's not just that he runs around insulting people, it's that he doesn't quite realize the consequences of what he's doing. Like, when recently when he was asked just a week or two ago about his abortion comments, where he said women who've had abortion should be punished, and he just spewed out this just incomprehensible word salad. It had been like over a month since he made those comments that offended everybody in Colorado. An uproar. And it seems like at no point did anybody like whisper in his ear and say, "Oh, well, here's what you need to say if abortion comes up again." And he doesn't have people around him in his campaign that say, "This is who Dr. Russell Moore is, and that's why he's important, and here's how we should handle this." He just, goes off. And whether or not it does more harm than good, they don't care. They just somehow are going to assume that as the campaign goes on, that Donald Trump's batting average is going to be high when it comes to this sort of thing. And I think that is a really, really risky and dangerous bet to make.
It raises a larger question, Mark, that you've written about recently, and that is Donald Trump capable? Does he have it in him to grow as a presidential candidate?
I mean, I think the evidence so far is that no. Like the abortion comments I gave are just a great example. I mean, this is a delicate subject. Every presidential candidate has to deal with it. And yet at every step of the way, whenever this topic comes up, Trump just makes a hash of things or causes, problems. And it's particularly bad because he needs to gain credibility on it, because not that long ago he was pro-choice. He's floated his incredibly, pro-abortion sister who's a federal judge as a possible Supreme Court nominee. People need a lot of reassurance on this topic, and yet he just never seems to put any sort of effort into approving his rhetoric on this. Now, having said that, the primary was a very different kind of race than the one he's going to run now. He's going to receive even more media scrutiny, if that's possible, and it's also going to be a situation where possibly the media coverage isn't going to be nearly as friendly as it was now that it's becomes more of a two-person race. So in that situation, maybe Trump will adjust. We've already seen signs that he's making his rhetoric and policy proposals more liberal and moderate and less conservative. So we do know he knows how to adapt in certain ways. The question is aside from his actual policies and rhetoric, can he adapt his temperament to the main election heading toward November?
I want to question the idea that he needs to grow or develop as a candidate. I think that it's actually true that he has done really well as he is, and that to change his approach might be more damaging than to quote unquote grow. I think that we are possibly assuming that the electorate is more thoughtful or more ethical than it is, and that Americans, after decades of really bad education and religious instruction and whatnot, is in fact the electorate that is choosing to have Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump as the two main candidates to choose from. This is not a healthy electorate. It's not a healthy populace. It does not bode well for the future of the republic. But I think Donald Trump is actually a really good candidate for the moment, and he will do much better than people realize, in part because the culture is not, you know, it's not a culture that cares much about respect for each other or for thinking through the implications of policy decisions. And I mean, that's kind of bad. That's really bad news, actually. But I'm not sure I agree that growing would help him out as a candidate.
Real quick question for you on the media there, Molly. Trump already showed very early in his public campaign that the slightest criticism or even tough questions really got him going. And Megyn Kelly is now a household name because of it. And I'm wondering, if he starts getting more critical media attention, is he just going to basically go full Trump on everybody?
I don't know, but I think the interesting media dynamic there is that usually what happens is the media are pretty neutral toward the Republican candidates while they're battling to figure out who wins the primary. And then once that is chosen, then the media turn on the Republican candidate. And usually the person that they advocate for is the one, you know, they'll say, oh, this person's the most moderate. We kind of like this person. And that would be Donald Trump in this case. Well, then once he gets the nomination, then they start saying that he's this radical, awful person. I don't think we're going to see that dynamic this time because Donald Trump is perfectly situated to exploit all the weaknesses of broadcast television. He is entertaining. He brings in ratings. He keeps the story going and moving in a way that gives you fresh content every couple of hours. And so I think the media are in an extremely dysfunctional relationship. I think you'll see some people on the left, the more leftern most parts of the media, try to push back on him. But I also think that people don't really care if he hasn't thought through policy positions or if he's inconsistent in his approach, because they see that same inconsistency and falsehoods that other candidates speak out about, or other candidates have, and the media don't seem to care about those. You know, the last 8 years of President Obama being a good example, where you had, you know, the administration repeatedly lying about everything from the Iran deal to what was going to happen under Obamacare, and the media didn't care there. So they have kind of rendered themselves worthless as an accountability organization.
Yeah, the media didn't care then, but the fact of the matter is Obamacare and the Iran deal were both successful accomplishments of the Obama administration. So whether or not the people, you know, see through what the media is doing, it doesn't change the fact that the media can be effective in driving in a narrative that gives just enough cover to achieve a desired outcome. And I think that is the danger with Trump. I mean, I agree with Molly that, you know, the American public are, you know, at a precarious place in their sort of intellectual and moral, you know, development at this point in time. But at the same time, I'm not willing to say that if Trump doesn't grow as a candidate, he's not going to find himself outflanked by a media establishment that just decides one day they just wake up and say, we can't really do this because it runs completely counter to our own liberal principles. And we see this. They've done it time and time again. There's all kinds of things that the media could have done that would have been in their self-interest, you know, if they had just been more fair. You know, they would have brought in more viewers if they didn't have such a liberal slant or anything like that. And time again, the news media chooses to chooses ideological fealty over necessarily ratings and, you know, what's in their self-interest.
Before I let you guys go, Mark, one last question for you. Who's going to pay for Donald Trump's presidential campaign?
Yeah, this is a really good question. And when I talk about Donald Trump needing the whole party to line up and support and unite him, this is a classic example. By this point in time in the race in 2012, Mitt Romney was raising something like $2 million a day. Trump has nothing in the way of a major fundraising infrastructure at this point in time. You know, he's running against Hillary Clinton, who set a fundraising goal of $2 billion, which is just an insane amount of money, and she just might get there. At the same time, there's been some good reporting. David Drucker, the Washington Examiner, did a good report where he called up a bunch of, you know, top Republican fundraisers and asked them, what are they doing about Trump? And the reality is that most of them are just staying on the sidelines. There was a great quote from a Wall Street Journal reporter elsewhere where he said he called up a major Republican fundraiser and asked him, you know, about Donald Trump. And he said he looked into fundraising for Donald Trump, but his wife told him that she would divorce him if he started raising money for Donald Trump. So, you know, the kind of people that Trump has alienated in a lot of ways in terms of, you know, really going for the throat of the party establishment are now the people that he perhaps needs the most in terms of, you know, funding a modern campaign, because he's got no fundraising and he hasn't been developing a, you know, ground game or all the other technological tools that are really expensive and are a hallmark of modern campaigns and Democrats excel at. You know, they've got campaigns full of, you know, Google and Facebook engineers that are finding ways right now to turn out the vote in November, and Donald Trump's got none of that.
Folks, you can read Mark and Molly Hemingway's columns under the Listen On Demand page at issuesetc.org. Molly Hemingway is senior editor for The Federalist. Molly, thank you.
Thank you.
And Mark Hemingway, senior writer for The Weekly Standard. Thank you, Mark.
Thanks, guys.
When we come back, we're going to talk about what was missing from a New York Times column titled, What Makes Texas, Texas? Terry Mattingly will be our guest. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc.
We Lutherans were never aided by following along with some other tradition's theological priorities and catchphrases.
Issues Etc. regular guest, Pastor Heath Curtis, coordinator for stewardship for the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod on a Lutheran approach to stewardship.
Other folks are not approaching it from our good, solid Lutheran understanding of law and gospel and vocation. There's a place to talk about this in Christianity, and we have a way of talking about stewardship as Lutherans without ever using the word stewardship, if you like. I'm going to talk to you today about your vocation in your home, in your church, in your society, and how each one of these makes a claim on you, on your presence, on your support, on your prayers. That's how we should talk about this as Lutherans.
You'll find several stewardship resources at lcms.org/stewardship, lcms.org/stewardship.
Did you know that Luther Academy has been providing continuing education for confessional Lutheran pastors and laypeople worldwide for more than 20 years? Luther Academy publishes Logia, the Confessional Lutheran Dogmatics Series, and Luther Digest. Find out more about Luther Academy and sign up to receive their free email newsletter at lutheracademy.com. LutherAcademy.com, and like them on Facebook, facebook.com/LutherAcademy.
The 500th anniversary of the Lutheran Reformation is fast approaching. We have such a rich history as Lutherans, and many people don't realize that. The CLCC offers a seminar called Your Reformation Walk that teaches that rich heritage and helps you appreciate it. The CLCC also offers other seminars designed to help laity learn to appreciate what Lutherans believe, teach, and confess. So invite us to your church. Visit theclcc.org and get details on scheduling a seminar for your church today.
Smartest listeners in radio, you're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. St. Paul's Lutheran, Coleman, Alabama; Faith Lutheran, Waterloo, Iowa; Emmanuel Lutheran, Everett, Washington; Lake George Lutheran Chapel, Fremont, Indiana; Shepherd of the Hills Lutheran, Snohomish, Washington; Faith Lutheran, Buford, South Carolina; Trinity Lutheran, Great Falls, Montana; Mount Calvary Lutheran, Westview, Pennsylvania; St. Paul Lutheran, International Falls, Minnesota; Redeemer Lutheran, Marshalltown, Iowa; Trinity and Grace Lutheran, Bear Creek, Wisconsin; St. Paul Lutheran, Sevierville, Tennessee; Good Shepherd Lutheran, Sherman, Illinois; and Zion Lutheran, Dexter, Iowa. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to issuesetc.org, click support, and print a one-page flyer. The Issues Etc. 300.